Hey, this is Chuck Slavin. You are listening to the Handsome Timmy D Express. I am over on the East Coast, Boston, Massachusetts, and I know you're listening internationally. So keep on listening.
Hello, dear reader. Hello, dear listener, and welcome to episode 37 of the Handsome Timmy D Express, which is a proud part of the Dan and Travis Show, an awesome podcast about awesome things that you can find on the internet or your fancy podcast apps. We're also a very proud part of the Chronic Rift series of podcasts that attempt and succeed in putting the culture in pop culture. This and a bunch of other great, fantastic podcasts are available at chronicrift.com. I just want to open today, not to be super solemn or serious, but as we're recording, the largest storm on record is heading into the onto the shores of Mexico, and we're an international show. We've been listened to in many markets, including Mexico, and just all of our best wishes and all of our prayers to everybody in Mexico who's affected by this almost incomprehensible storm. So we are pulling for you, Mexico, and sending best wishes. And if people don't know what to do in situations like that, you know, it's easy to Google charities, things like the Red Cross and people like that to help out in situations like that. So best wishes to Mexico and everybody in the path of Hurricane Patricia. So anyway, it's been a while since we recorded because there's been a lot of honest-to-goodness screenwriting and filmmaking happening, and I'm very proud to welcome an honest-to-goodness writer, director, filmmaker. She is the director of I'm Through With White Girls, independent feature, quirky comedy. She also wrote the grand prize-winning IFP Market script, Native Hunkies. Welcome to the Handsome Timmy Express, Jen Sharp.
Hello. Hey.
Awesome. Thanks for coming on board. Now, what we're going to be talking about today, which is a topic that I know I recently kind of have talked about this quite a bit in the blog, and it's something that you and I have talked about at length, and it seems like a great, it's a thing that we wrestle with as screenwriters and filmmakers and stuff, which is sort of what qualifies as success and what qualifies as failure at the various levels and tiers within the business, and what some people see as success is what other people see as failures and vice versa and all of that kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And more vice versa to me, because it's like what some people see as failure, really a lot of people see as success. And so like a lot of my life is people telling me how successful I am when I feel most of the time like a failure.
Yeah. It's one of those tricky things, because how do you even define, like, I almost feel like we need to start with how do you define what a success or failure is? And the perspective of it. Because no matter who you are, I mean, I don't care if you are a film student writing their first screenplay, or if you're Steven Spielberg, you are going to be dealing with hills and valleys, ups and downs, successes and failures throughout your career.
Exactly.
And a lot of it is perspective.
It is, and it's finding your definition. And that's the thing, like you say, let's start with defining it. And I guess the problem is, that's the problem, is the definition of success. And we put it, especially if you're in the entertainment industry, you think, I'm going to be successful because I'm going to be rich, or I'm going to have made a movie that everybody's seen, or there's going to be some like grand scale, and that's what success is. That's what we see on TV. When really, as an artist, really, if you can just humble yourself as an artist, success is just being able to create your art. And that's true. And it's a hard thing to tell yourself when you're like getting older and older and not really making a living doing what you want to do all the time. But you're still doing what you want to do, which is really successful, because a lot of people don't do what they want to do.
No, that's absolutely right. And even if you are kind of chasing the money and fame, it's going to be really hard to get those things if you don't care. Without the passion and without the drive and without a certain inspiration.
Right. And is that successful if you do make the money? And you're up there in Hollywood doing these things and you have this recognition, but you're really miserable most of your personal life. Like, I mean, so success, and we're talking success as like filmmakers and stuff, but that part of that is just success as a human being in your life. And so if you're a successful filmmaker, meaning somebody who's made $1 million and makes tons of money and everybody knows their name, is that really successful if you hate what you're doing and you're miserable and there aren't people who love you around you, or a milder version of that description?
Right. And well, let me ask you about you specifically, because you've had some pretty enviable success in the business. You've made a feature film. You made it, produced it, and directed it. You worked and developed the script, and it is available for people to see. You have won a pretty prestigious award with what sounds like a pretty controversial, maybe unusual topic with the title named Native Honkies.
Native Honkies.
You know what I mean? But at the same time, you say at the same time, like you don't necessarily feel as successful as maybe you should be.
Yeah, and you know, it happens to me numerous times when people say to me, "What are you talking about? Do you know how many people have not directed a feature? Do you know how many people would die to have just directed a feature?"
I haven't.
Yeah, and because I'll sit there saying, "But I'm not doing this, and this isn't happening, and blah blah blah," and you know, and then I have to stop and be like, "Okay, that's a success." And like, even like, you know, coming from a town in Ohio where like people who I went to high school with or people who I grew up with can look at my movie on the television. My cousin in North Carolina texted me at 2 a.m. one night and said, "Hey, your movie's on television here," and that's pretty successful. Like, you know,
yeah.
But it doesn't, but it's, I don't know, like, that's the hard thing. Like, is it? I mean, it is, sure, but it's just hard when you're sitting in the reality of life, and the reality is, I didn't make a dime off that movie. I still, you know, have to figure out how I'm going to pay my bills. I still, you know, I've sacrificed family and kids, and, you know, I've made choices to go more towards my passion of the career than family and normal things, and meanwhile, I'm still not supporting myself fully on this. And so it's like, am I just failing as each birthday happens more and more? It's like, I was hoping I'd do this by now, and I don't even have this, and I don't even have this. But then somebody's like, "But you directed a feature, and you won this prize, and you're doing what you love." And I'm like, yeah, you're right. So I don't know. I guess I'm a success, but, and that's it. That's like the success of the failure of success.
Yeah.
And success is failing on a daily basis. And on a daily basis, my life is a lot of failing because I always have a script I'm writing that I want somebody to make, but they're not making it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have feedback that I've gotten and I get it back and it's not as good as I think. And my daily life, more than anything, is a lot of failures, a lot of like, oh, well, hopefully one day I'll get this meeting with this agent or hopefully this will happen. And so, you know, but if you look at the big scope, in my daily life, I'm chasing what I love doing. I love writing. I love telling stories.
I think it's one of those situations where, listening to how you described it just now, it's a strange scenario where you're both right. You know what I mean? The people who are telling you are success, they're right. You have a lot of success that you should be really proud of. But at the same time, you're right as well in that you still have goals you haven't accomplished.
Yeah.
And you have to still build upon the success or, you know, kind of forget about it and not rest on your laurels and keep going for it. It is absolutely 100% one of the trickier deals, and it's quite schizophrenic in the business because you're describing a lot of what I go through as well. Where sometimes, you know, like I recently found some representation for one of my works to go out there, and it's like, okay, well, while I'm waiting, there's still a lot of stagnancy and like pitching other projects and getting turned down and this, that, and the other thing. It's like that episode of Seinfeld where everything just evens out. You know, where Jerry like loses $20, throws it out the window, and somebody walks up and there's the $20 again. And it's all just sort of that dealing with both of those things.
Yeah. And even in the same, if you take it even smaller into screenwriting, into writing your script, right? It's like, yeah, like every writer knows, you get this idea and you're so excited about it. And you're so excited about it that you tell yourself, I'm not going to tell anybody about it because I don't want to jinx it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to like make it good because inevitably maybe it'll turn out bad and like whatever. So I'm not going to tell anybody about this movie, but I love it. But you end up loving it so much that you end up telling people, oh, it's about this, because you're so excited. And then they get excited, and then you're more excited, and you write, and you're like, I'm writing a movie, and I'm excited. And then as soon as you get done with it, you're like, you start showing it to people, you send it out to people whose opinions you might respect, or you pay for coverage, mm-hmm. you know, one of these places. And the next thing you know, as soon as you put it out there, you start hearing all the things that people don't understand about it, and suddenly you're just like totally popped down.
Well, that sounds like a great segue to what can sometimes be a four-letter word, but is it also can be a necessary evil or necessary blessing, which is coverage.
Yes. I like that. Coverage is a four-letter word.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't know because I've only gotten good coverage.
Oh.
No, that's not true at all. I don't know of anybody that's only gotten good coverage. You know, for example, we want to shout out to our friends at The Blacklist. Franklin Leonard at the Austin Film Festival, the founder of The Blacklist, told a story about how The Social Network was one of the beta scripts, I believe, I think is how he put it. I may be getting that part wrong, but two readers read the Social Network, and one gave it a 10 and one gave it a 0.
Wow.
So that's the wonderful world of screenwriting.
Yes.
In a nutshell, and the wonderful world of coverage in a nutshell.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So in that, I will share some lovely coverage that I got from the Slam Dance coverage program, which I put in like $100, $110 and was like, for the script, it was a few years back, but I was another script I was really excited about. And, you know, realizing I would compare this script a little bit to kind of a Monty Python-ish script. So it's definitely a little out there. But I kind of thought it was brilliant. Like, I was excited about this. I spent a lot of time writing. Any of my friends knew, what are you doing? Oh, I'm writing my movie. Oh, I'm writing my movie. Oh, it's about this. So excited. So I'm like, let me pay the Slam Dance coverage. And I should say, so I got the worst coverage of my life. Like, you know, but it's like when you think you love something and then you get these back. So I'm going to read like a little bit of the coverage that I got from Slam Dance, which just is the high and low success and failure. Because first of all, I think it's a success, period, to be spending a year or months writing a movie that you love and love every second of it. Like, you're being creative, you're being successful. So here I am succeeding in doing what I want to do and being really excited about it and being creative and getting my word out. And then here comes the failure, which is, you know, spending my money that I don't really have to get professional coverage. And there was nothing good about this coverage. So this is what, these are just a few sentences. I have a few different parts I'll talk. So one of the things that they have is what works. So they say, what works? Well, this person said, the dialogue is the strength of the script. That's not to say it's witty or funny or possessing of any distinctive style or voice. It's just not bad.
Yikes.
Far and away the best part of the story. So that was what worked. And this is after, you know, being...
I'm like getting stressed out for you.
Yeah,
this.
Right? And first of all, like, it's just... And the thing is, like, this happens over... And I think I'll say in the middle of this while I'm talking about it, that the same day I actually got a call from a manager in LA who I had given the script to as well. And he called me and said, I just read your script and it's brilliant.
Yeah. See, there you go.
Yeah. So I also think this kind of coverage that's so bad is completely irresponsible, and nobody should accept money to give this kind of coverage, because everybody should know that as an artist, certain people get things and certain people don't. And obviously this reader didn't get my script. But the same day I got this thing in the mail, serendipity or like a sign, something to keep me going, because I might have just like slit my wrists after this coverage. But instead, the same day I got a call from a manager who said, your script is brilliant. I want you to come in and talk to me about it. It needs changes. I have things to do, but like, this is awesome. And so, you know.
But see, that's an important thing to bear in mind, though. And I think we should clarify something. Just to be sure, like, it's not that you're not open to criticism.
Right.
But there's criticism and then there's
this
stuff that you cannot necessarily work with. You know, one of I went through an experience, and I have a love-hate relationship with theblacklist.com. I think screenwriters should use it. I think their prices are great. I think they offer a really amazing service. I think the fact that it's completely writing-centric is awesome. And go into the story. The newsletter from Scott Myers and his blog is must-read material for screenwriters. And I've got some great reads off the Blacklist, but I did actually complain about one.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you know, one of the reasons why is he wrote, I used a newspaper article for exposition. And at the end of the newspaper article, they read what exposition, like a recap of the story. And he said, no newspaper would do that. When newspapers only do that, like if somebody writes an article on Richard Nixon today, they will sum up the Watergate trial at the end of the article. And I said, come on, guys, that's not fair. That's not a fair criticism. And I literally was thinking, like, I used the example of the news reports in Back to the Future. The movie puts in plutonium was stolen from a local thing on a news report, which some people may not like that form of exposition. But as we just saw this past week, Back to the Future was pretty successful.
Right.
So I'm like, I actually did. And then there were some other things in there that were really quite unreasonable. And they, to the credit, the Blacklist worked with me and said, you know something, we'll give you another read. And I got a much more better one, because there is stuff where it's like, you know, there's feedback, there's criticism, and then there's sort of I don't even want to say it's not fair, but like if somebody really hates your stuff, I think you have permission to ignore that person and find the people who like your stuff.
Yeah.
Because no matter what, like even name them, name Aaron Sorkin, Vince Gilligan. There's people out there who think that Darren Aronofsky can't make a film. You know what I mean? Like you,
right.
You can't necessarily.
And other people would call him brilliant.
Which I do, you know.
Yeah, so. I do too. I love Darren Aronofsky. And I think that that's the danger. And that's what I have a hard time is when people are the do-all, die-all. Like the newspaper would never, newspapers don't do this. It's like, don't be the person who claims what should and shouldn't and wouldn't. You don't know. Like
the other thing too that I did, I actually looked up 3 or 4 newspaper articles like on Google. Like I went to Washington Post and things like that. And I was like, I can prove that's not true. That's actually an objective thing.
Yeah.
Like, you may not like my script. That's subjective. But that's a criticism that's kind of objective. And there is that thing of like, I think you should, especially when you're developing a script and you're writing the script and it's new and fresh, you've got to be open. You've got to have a pair of ears out there so that you can fix it and make it better and find out what's wrong with it and make it work to the best possible way you can. But again, I want to give permission to aspiring screenwriters out there who don't have the support system of the studio or producers to be like, hey, guess what? If somebody hates your script, you can't ignore them. You can absolutely walk away, get a second opinion and get more reads and get other things.
And you should, you know, and you should, because it's like, that's the whole thing is like, if you, but the thing is that as an artist, you're sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
So all it takes is one person to say something bad to put you on this like a little bit of an obsessive spiral about how what the fuck am I doing in my with my life, and you know, and when somebody else says something good, it's just it doesn't have the weight a lot of times. But you have to learn to not to let the bad not have the weight.
And I think that's what I mean by like not having the support system of producers and studios. I mean, a lot of screenwriters are in their rooms, mm-hmm. in their apartment, in their homes. Many don't live in LA or New York, and many of them are just putting this thing out there. And if it gets completely shit on, they won't have, as opposed to, hey, listen, you know something? This is okay, but this part really needs work. Or, you know something? I know you wrote a horror movie, but there's just not enough scares in here, so you need to add more. That's something a writer can work with. You know what I mean? If you're a horror writer in Iowa and you send it out to a festival, if you get coverage that comes back that says, hey, listen, you're close, but you need like 3 or 4 really big scares in Act 2. That's something that writer can work with and go home and be like, okay, I can work on that and resubmit it next year or try to get it out to management elsewhere. There's a big difference between that and what you described in the coverage you got.
Right. Well, and in that coverage, that's what works. And when you get to the point that says what doesn't work, so there's these sections, right? What works. So that's what works. And of course, he couldn't even make that a compliment. He had to be like, I'm not saying it's a compliment. It's just not as bad as the rest of the story.
Right, right.
So what doesn't work? The first sentence. The story is absolutely ridiculous. It flat out makes no sense.
I hate that note.
Yeah.
I do. I hate that note. And then like, I'll tell you why. I hate that. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. No, it was like, I actually have meant to get to Slam Dance at one point and get my money back. Because I'm like, I don't pay $100 for this kind of shit. Especially because the same day somebody else called it brilliant. So, I mean, it's just, if you hate something so much, then step back and be like, you know what? This just isn't for me. Like, I don't get it. Like, what? I'm sure you have a point. You didn't get your point across to me, but somebody else might. But, like, to just do, you know, all of this. He actually literally said here, he said, the script is a mess. And then under the thing, it says, what to do next. They have these titles, what to do next. He says, start over.
Wow.
Which is just absolutely crazy. But I like this because it's just kind of like, how do you get ripped apart? And I literally want to tell you that I think this movie is brilliant. It needs help, but there's some really great things. But like I say, it's a little bit Monty Python-ish. It's a little absurd. So the person who read this obviously probably doesn't even like Monty Python. You know, Monty Python, there's like people who love it and hate it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, finding that right person who likes your script to keep you going. But like you said, when you don't have that, how do you keep going forward and keep considering yourself a success and keep going when you're confronted with this type of stuff all day, every time, you know?
Well, how did you do it?
Wow.
I mean, you had the manager call, so you had that serendipitous thing.
Yeah, I had the manager call, and, you know, I liked, okay, and this will segue kind of into the whole, like, get what you had said, what I've heard you say about people who like your script should read it, is that I always send the first draft of everything I write to my mom because she loves everything I do. And I think it's important to start with like finding people that are positive. Now that's not valid. Like then I move on to other things, but But it's true. Like, what you do is you realize, like, there are people who understand your voice. There are people who don't understand your voice. And you really have to find the people who do or who are interested in what you're saying and then take their feedback.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's also, I actually have found a series of questions that I heard on a podcast that Pilar Alessandra on The Page does this podcast.
I was going to say, what is the Handsome Timothy Express is the only podcast I listen to, I thought.
Sorry.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, wow, betrayal, but that's okay.
I'm like,
well, let's hear this grand list. No, I'm teasing.
I'm like, I don't know if I can say her thing without mentioning her podcast.
No, of course, please. Absolutely. No, this is, please, this is all nonprofit nonsense.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we're just having fun here.
She had a guy on her podcast, and his name, I have to, because I'm about to, I'm talking about his thing.
What? Yeah.
Mandel, and he talked about how he has this list of questions that you should give people who read the draft of your script.
I don't think I've ever heard this.
Yeah, and it's actually pretty amazing. And so what I've started doing, and when I don't do it, I end up feeling bad, is when I give people my script, I give them a list of questions to help guide them in the coverage that I need.
Mm.
So it doesn't give them a free-for-all of, I hated it, you know, and then I'm always like, say whatever you want. So then obviously they end up telling you what they think. But some of the questions that they ask, are they're really good. It's kind of like, it says, like I have a couple of the questions here. Here's one thing, like, was there anything that you had trouble believing or buying? So that's like right then and there, like, this was believable, this was not.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah, and then it says, if your friend asked you if you like the movie or not, how would you answer? Here's one which says, if this film was on the Letterman show, what was the best clip that would represent this film that they're going to show on the Letterman show? And so it kind of lets you, it's instead of saying, did you like it? Did you not like what? How do you see this movie? It helps the reader see how they saw the movie and you see how they see the movie. And then you can be like, wow, they didn't see the movie I was trying to write at all. But you see the movie they saw, you know? And then the last one is like, if the studio who owned the script hired you to make it better and they told you to do whatever you wanted to improve it, what would you do?
Wow.
And I have, it's like 15 questions, but they're all kind of good because they end up, it's all, and like one is like, if you went to a party, which character in the script would you want to hang out with the most?
Mm-hmm.
And it's ways of kind of getting like, who did they relate to and all that. So I found ways of protecting myself when I ask for feedback.
Well, there's also ways of like, I don't want to get in trouble with what I'm about to say, but like, to be as honest, I have very few non-writers read my stuff because... And this is not that an audience member can't give you great feedback, because the audience is actually who we're trying to appease. But a lot of times an audience doesn't always know what they're looking for until they see it.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't always have the best way to articulate what it is they're seeing. Like, for example, I hate the criticism, well, that movie had no plot. No, it absolutely had a plot. Unless you're watching an art film from the 60s, you're not watching a movie with no plot. You just didn't like the plot. And I can't work with that. Like, if somebody were to read my script and say, start over, or it has no plot, I can't work with that. So I only go to writers, and it's one of the things I've discovered in the past 5 or 6 years is I have given scripts to people, some who think they're writers, some who are not writers or in the industry, and I just feel bad. I don't want to sound like I'm being mean, but I get the feedback, or I hear what they're saying, or I look at the things, and I'm like, they don't know how to read a script.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh gosh, this is not helpful at all. Like, this is not at all what, because like, I literally had somebody once circle a joke in the script and right next to it, this would be a good place for a joke. And it was very, very clearly a joke. And the funny thing is every other person who read it, who was a screenwriter, wrote great joke. So this isn't me being defensive here. This is like, oh boy, I need to find people who I know and understand a screenplay. No one understand how it works structurally. No one understand how it works emotionally, the rhythm and the pace of the thing, so that somebody could say, oh my God, this scene, you got 4 extra pages here or something. You know what I mean? Or you know, things like that that are really practical. And that's an important thing. Now, I'm not telling you not to give it to your mom, and to listeners out there for aspiring screenwriters, like who, because I think forming a circle of readers is vital. I'm not saying you can't have non-writers do it, but it is going to be a trickier type of feedback. If that makes sense.
It does, but I have to say the least helpful feedback I've gotten has been from readers, professional readers. Like this was Slam Dance. Like, that's a huge thing. Austin Film Festival, I sent a script in, and one of the guy said, numerous spelling errors, which, first of all, I mean, if it's a good script, the spelling errors, you know, like, that's such a minor thing, but obviously it wasn't good in his eyes. But he said, for example, and this script takes place in Mexico, and I had written about that cumbia music plays, C-U-M-B-I-A, cumbia music plays. It's cumbia. It's a type of Mexican music or Latin mm-hmm. music, right? He said, for example, and he read the line where I wrote cumbia, and he corrected it to say kumbaya.
Oh, no.
Yeah, this is the Austin Film Festival cover that I paid $100 for, and he's correcting cumbia to kumbaya, which really isn't why I spent the money on the coverage. And he's wrong.
And that's a risk. Yes. Well, see, that's another thing. That's objective versus subjective. There are actually objective things where you can say, "Ah, I'm not going to listen to this." You know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, with Slamdance, I'm 50-50. I had one that liked it, one that didn't. I haven't had the misfortune of that, quite frankly. But I have had those sometimes. One of the things that my sort of thing I run into is you've got some missing words in here. And I sometimes let people circle and be like, no, you should put these words in. And that bothers me because, like, I'm like, no, I left those words out for a reason. Like,
right.
It sounds better.
Right.
These people are mad. They're angry. There's high emotion. And you actually will leave words out. And I've learned that from countless transcripts and interviews I've conducted in 10 years in reality TV. If you read transcripts of how people talk and put them next to script dialogue, they don't match up. And a lot of writers try to merge the two of them together, and I'm one of them. And it's like, I've had people say, "Oh, you're missing words here." I'm like, "No, I'm not. I'm not missing a single word."
Yeah, well, and I don't think that's valid criticism. Like, I just don't think whether you're missing a word. I mean, the point is it a good story? Like, you know, words can be fixed. I mean, mm-hmm. I work on movies. I art direct. You know. And I get in there as art director, and, like, you know, the day before we start shooting, we get a new script. Like, anybody who knows scripts, I feel like they're always being rewritten. So if there's a spelling error, if you're missing words, if it's a dialogue thing, like, that can all be fixed if you know what you're talking about. Let's talk about, is this a good story? Is this enticing? Is it interesting? Do I want to make this? And to me, that's more valid. Like, when people start, like, nitpicking about the spellings and the words out, I just feel like it's someone who's trying to act like they know what they're talking about when they really don't.
Yeah, let me throw this one at you. I've honestly, and it's a disappointing thing. I just wrote a recent blog on rejection and things like that, and the fact that industry rejection is different than real life rejection, because the studio and people can read your stuff and I mean these festivals will take more entries from you. You know what I mean? And you may get different readers and things. And studios, it happens all the time. Studios and producers read stuff and say, "Boy, you know, this isn't right for me right now, but come back with your next idea." It's not permanent, you know? And I wrote that, unfortunately, I've had to deal with, through various websites and things like that, writers approaching me to read their stuff. And unfortunately, I haven't really had time.
Yeah.
Earlier this year, I did read a few things, and sometimes people would be nice about whatever I said. And sometimes writers would get really, really defensive. And it's a tricky fine line. And somebody wrote to me recently and asked me to read their script. Several people, actually, this has happened. And I said, "No, I'm sorry, I don't have time. I could to really sit down and read a script and give it the proper notes and attention and coverage it needs." And I will more often than not get the response, "Well, I wasn't looking for coverage. I just want to know if it's any good or not." And I'm kind of like, I don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how to just tell if it's good or not, because I think every script is probably good and can be made a lot better and is probably a good idea and a kernel behind it, and it may need to be reworked and developed and noted, but I don't know how to give that blanket yes, no, good, bad. Like, I don't know if that exists.
No, it doesn't exist.
And we as writers have to be open to that. And that's why I say, like, you got to find the people, not who will like the script, but who you know will like and understand and appreciate your voice.
Right.
If that makes a certain sense.
Yeah. And people who want to hear what you have to say, who like the mm-hmm. story. Otherwise, it doesn't. You get bad things. And that's the problem. I think that's actually also the problem when you write more offbeat things.
Yes.
I'm comparing myself to Monty Python. I mean, like, so you're not going to find, in general, a lot of people aren't going to get my stuff. And so I got to find somebody who kind of is on that wavelength, because otherwise I'm going to get just beaten and beaten down by people who are like, "Your script, like this Slamdance, your script is absolutely nonsense. Like, okay, like, obviously he just didn't even get it.
Yeah, and there's an element too, but I mean, I just want to make sure we're being clear, though, about, like, we as writers have to be open to criticism, and we have to know that sometimes when we get rejected, when we get the pass, when we don't place in a festival, sometimes it is us, you know, and I don't want to sound like we're being unreasonable about that, but, well, here's a good example. We just talked about this before we were recording. There's several festivals, I'm not going to name them, you know, but there's several festivals I've sent several scripts to that I don't even place in. Scripts that a few weeks later I will win another festival. So those festivals I don't place in, I'm just not even going to bother anymore. Because whatever it is with the readers and judges, they read my stuff and they go, uh-uh, not for me. And like you just talked about your stuff being offbeat. I have a similar problem. I write a lot of like deep, dark dramas. I write a lot. All of my protagonists are pretty dicey, shady characters that you may not like in real life, and they may not like in a movie or TV show. So I get it when I totally get it when somebody reads one of my scripts and is like, "Get this guy away from me." So I need to find the people who are like, "Oh my God, tell me more." And that's an important thing, and that's another message for aspiring screenwriters out there: is like, if you got two people read your script and they're like, this is the worst piece of shit I've ever read. And then three other people read and go, wow, this is really cool. Don't worry about the other two people. You need to talk to those three people because that's your audience.
Yes.
And that's who you're going to be writing for and trying to please and who you're going to be speaking to and who you're going to be able to relate to, and they'll be able to relate to you.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is to learn not to give up. I mean,
absolutely.
So be able to take, because I think my problem was too, is I would get this. The thing is, this is, so this feedback from Slam Dance I got in 2008. So here I am 7 years later, still plugging away, you know, but like, why at that moment didn't I just quit when I really wanted to? I'm like, something that I think is so good that I would almost call brilliant, even though I know it's not brilliant, but it has potential to be, somebody else just called it shit, like, so much. Like, that is enough to be like, God, I'm really off. Like, I really don't know what I'm doing. Like, I thought I need to not be in this business. And the thing is, I had a lot of reactions like that to scripts when I got bad feedback, but I've learned not to take it. I've learned not to give up from it and to try to take what you can from the bad things. And I think early on, I gave up on too many scripts. Like, I was like, wow, this really does suck. Wow. And I walked away instead of reworking it and taking a step back and being like, okay, what did this person not get? What did they not understand? How can I make that a little more clear and make their bad negative criticism constructive? Turn it into constructive, because yes, obviously my script is not brilliant. Obviously it's not as good as I think it is. In my mind it is, because I know what I'm trying to do, but that's not on the page. You know, and that's the biggest thing, is realizing that.
Yeah,
like, as a writer, you write things and you see it. And I'm a director, so it's even more like, I know how I'm going to direct this. Like, I see it, but people don't see it. And that doesn't mean it's bad, and it doesn't mean it's not going to be brilliant, but it means that right now someone is not seeing it.
There's still a, exactly, and there's, so, oh my God, and that's the struggle.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing all day at the typewriter, or excuse me, sorry kids, laptop, or computer, you know what I mean, the keyboard, you know, like that's what we're doing all day with this thing, is figuring out, I see it in my mind's eye, and especially for screenwriters, I think it's so hard. I think it is one of the hardest forms of writing out there, even though I love it, it's what comes naturally to me. You know what I mean? Like, I see this wide open, expansive vista of beauty and history and all these things and this beautiful picture in my mind. And a novelist can describe it in three pages. You get three lines as a screenwriter. And so your economy of words is very difficult. So that bringing the vision onto the page to translate it to the reader, it's a very tricky thing to do. And I think you're absolutely right to be like, okay, something's speed bumping here. You know, it's funny, Steve Skaya, who was on the show last year around this time, he always says there's no such thing as a bad note. I don't know if I 100% agree with him on that, but I will agree with the idea that whenever you get a note, it's not always coming from a vacuum.
Yeah.
Something somewhere. Now, the other thing, too, is readers will sometimes give notes, and I don't mean professional script readers, I mean just anybody who reads your script, may sometimes give you a note that says, I didn't like, let's just say, for example, and I've probably told this story a million times in the show, but it's worth repeating. I don't like this joke on page 23. And you go to page 23 and you're like looking at it and you're like, man, it's a great joke. I don't know how to fix this joke. But actually, it may not be the joke that's the problem on page 23. It may be the setup on page 18.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another struggle that we as readers have to look at, is not just the note, but as we'd say in reality TV and some scripted circles, the spirit of the note. And what exactly is it about that joke that's like, oh, maybe it wasn't set up right. Maybe it was something on this page. I didn't have to fix the joke. I had to fix the setup.
Yeah.
That's another struggle there. But again, that's something you can work with. I don't know if you could necessarily work with start over.
Yeah.
And certainly. I've heard from numerous different money grubbing agents and producers, you should never tell somebody they're a bad writer, because writing can always be improved upon.
Yeah.
People may get better with practice.
People may get better, and you may not be reading it right. I mean, also, just, I mean, like the Harry Potter. Harry Potter is the perfect example. I mean, what, she spent years and years and years getting rejected. And Harry Potter, like, went huge. But nobody would buy that book. Nobody.
Well, oh, yeah. There was a famous memo going around, like, well, we don't know if you guys will be interested in this in America. I know that that's out there somewhere.
Yeah. So the very first film I made ever was a short film, and I was like, it was a chance for me to learn how to make movies, and I decided instead of spending $10,000 at the New York Film Academy, mm-hmm. I would spend $10,000 on a short film and learn everything. And that was my goal. And so I made this movie, and it was called Waiting, and I still love this movie. Like, I kind of love, like, everything I do. Like, I don't think it's great. Like, I definitely
How dare you? I you want to be ashamed and tortured.
I know, but I mean, obviously, apparently not a lot of other people do always, but I was really excited about it. Like, but, and you should, like, if you love something, I'm telling you something from my soul, and like,
yeah.
Put it out there. So I gave it to somebody who's a very close person in my life who is very critical, and I've known this forever. So I know when I give this person feedback, it's going to be critical. So I got to be prepared for it. Well, so I showed, and this is what I learned. It's my very first film, but I showed her a rough draft. A rough cut of my film. And she was like, I mean, nothing good to say. Like, the wardrobe is blah, the lighting is dim, the acting is terrible, the sound is low. Like, I mean, literally, like, everything. And she actually said, this is what she said to me. She said, I would suggest that you don't put one more dime into this movie. It's your first movie and you've learned a lot. And she was like, you've learned a lot. It's great. It's your first movie. Like, move on. The next one will be better. But move forward towards the next one, because this one, like, you've learned enough, but don't finish it. Just don't even bother. Oof. Yeah. So I was like, there's no fucking way I'm going to put all this into a film and not finish it.
Yeah.
And I remember Spike Lee. I remember hearing Spike Lee talk, like, years and years ago. And he was like, anybody who's finished a film gets props. Because just finishing a film takes everything out of you. Even if it sucks and it's the worst film in the world, if you've made a film and you've finished it, that's a huge accomplishment. And I remember I'd heard that Spike Lee, and I'm like, I'm finishing this film. Like, I don't care if it sucks. It's my first film. But so for somebody to tell you, don't finish it. So I finished it. And by the time I finished it, I had spent like $25,000 on it because of losing an editor and losing all the footage and having to do it over again. And I could have easily quit, because I went in thinking I was going to spend $5,000 on it.
Jesus.
And by the end, it was $30,000. Yeah. And it was on credit cards. And I ended up staying on my friend's floor for a year after that. Like, I lived on her living room floor for a year because she's a great friend. And she told me, look, instead of paying rent for a year, why don't you pay off your credit cards?
Wow.
And it was awesome. So I lived on her floor for a year, and instead of paying rent every month, I paid off my credit card, and I paid off that film in a year. And but I put it all in my cards. But so by the time it was done, I was just so exhausted that I entered it into like 10 festivals, right? And of course, as my first film, Sundance, whatever, Berlin, Venice, like, you enter the ones you've heard of, right? So obviously it doesn't get into any of those. So I'm like, oh, it sucks. You know, nobody's accepting it. But I only entered it into like 8 films. So I made it into this one festival in New York City, like this Times Square festival. And it was like the first year ever. Somebody I knew somebody who was starting a festival, and it was like an art thing, whatever. So they were like, we'll show your film. So it was the only festival it ever showed in. And it was in Times Square, New York City, you know, year one.
Why not, though? Hell.
Yeah, that never went on. But my God, the film got a standing ovation. Like, people were laughing through the whole film. It got
and they were laughing with you, by the way. Like, you got a standing ovation. People liked it. Right. Yeah.
No, they were laughing. Yeah, they loved it. In fact, I had a few people send me emails for years after. I mean, friends of mine. Like, oh, I'll never forget that film you made. It was so good. Made me think about my own life. And, Yeah, and we got a standing ovation. Like, it was, you know, sure, it was like whatever random festival that lasted 1 year, but I mean, it doesn't even matter. It was like, there's actually about 20 people in the audience, and they loved it, and what an amazing thing. And that was all the energy I had, was that one festival. I never entered it into another. Nobody's ever seen this movie. I still think it's brilliant.
I'm dying to see it now.
But the point is, too, is like, I was told to quit. I was told point blank by someone who loves me, I love you. You're going to be great on the next one. This was learning. Quit. And from that first film, I didn't quit.
See, I think it's hard for people to get the acceptance of the struggle.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
We're not doing this because it's easy. We're doing this because we have to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't mean to sound grand or philosophical about it, but telling somebody, oh, like, I mean, work smarter, not harder. Don't get me wrong. Don't sit there and do extra work if you don't have to. But, you know what? There's a phrase going around nowadays, like, entrepreneurs are people who will work 80 hours a week so they don't have to work 40.
Yeah.
You know, and there's that resonates a lot in our world. It's a silly little phrase, but it's true. You know what I mean? There's something about that. Like, and I think it's hard for other people to understand, like, why are you putting yourself through this? You could turn around and say, because of that standing ovation. That's why you put yourself through it.
Yeah. And here I am, 15 years later, remembering that standing ovation and that moment in that theater.
You're going to remember it 15 years from now.
Yeah. And that was all I ever got from that.
And you could be standing up there. You may get a Golden Globe, and hopefully you'll remember your friend Handsome Timmy D, and you'll still remember that. You know what I mean? You'll still. And that Austin Film Festival, that's where you and I met last year.
Yes.
I mean, you grabbed some of those people who have been there, done that, and they'll tell you the same similar stories of like, yeah. Well, I remember this first scene. I remember this first deal. I remember that the first time an actor read my lines. They still get excited about it. I mean, big shots talking like that. So,
yeah. And that being said, I guess, you know, I should take a moment to focus on my successes. And it's like, well, what? So all this failure, because and it's funny because this whole thing, we start talking about the failures and the this and the that, and because that's what I live in. That's my immediate reality. But if I look at the things that I try to call a success, right? You know, I've directed a feature, and my feature got distribution, and Showtime bought it for 4 years. It was showed on Showtime television for 4 years. And it's been on cable ever since. It has done the rounds with the cable channels, which is great. It's, you know, and it made its money back. I mean, I didn't make any money, but the producers did. I've done numerous shorts. I keep doing shorts. You know, I've won awards with my scripts. And on top of that, you know, what other people, I had a friend of mine who's not in the industry who came and was like, you know, you're making money in your industry. I have found a way to make money as an art director, working in art department of films, doing whatever random jobs, and as an editor, you know, doing things I can do. And like, that is a success. Like and it's like, I go to set every day. I'm working on a movie right now at Warner Brothers, and I'm in the art department, and I have a reputable job, but I'm not the director, you know? And so every day I'm watching a director, I'm watching people do what I always wanted to do. I'm watching them do it. And it's reminding me that I'm not doing it yet. But at the same time, I'm making money in my industry, and I'm able to, you know, I'm able to be around being creative. And some people would tell me that's successful. And a movie I did last year for, you know, I was able to make enough money in 4 months just by art directing a movie that I left 3 months later. I bought a one-way ticket to Mexico, and I spent 3 months writing my next script in Mexico off of the money that I made doing art directing on a feature here in LA.
We keep bringing up Mexico. I really hope we're some good karma for them. You know, I don't mean to keep bringing it up, but I'm just,
it's a terrible thing happening.
But anyway, no, look, and that's phenomenal. And it's hard because I feel like we're walking a weird sort of tightrope where you never want to be too satisfied, but you never want to be too depressed either. You know, I remember reading an interview with Ozzy Osbourne years ago. You know, I'm a big metalhead. And reading a thing with Ozzy Osbourne, who's had possibly, arguably, one of the most successful careers in heavy metal ever. He is the Elvis of heavy metal. And, you know, they say to him, well, Ozzy, what else do you want to do? Or how do you look? I don't remember what the question was. But he said, you know something? I still say to myself, I've never made Sgt. Pepper.
Hmm.
I've never made an album as good as Sgt. Pepper.
Hmm.
This is Ozzy Osbourne here.
Yeah.
he's got one of the greatest careers of all time, and he still is aspiring and searching. And he'll tell you, he's been very public about the fact that these tours with Black Sabbath he's doing to wrap it up are some of the most important work he's done in his career. I think it's important to never be satisfied. Don't ever let good enough be good enough. But we don't want to be bitter either. Like, you shouldn't be angry at your director.
Right.
Or negative.
Right.
Or, like, resentful.
Right.
Because you see that shit all the time, and it's poison. And I've worked with people who are like, well, I could be doing that. It's like, well, yeah, but you're not. So,
you're not. Yep.
So you can just chill out and do your job and be, and you'll get the, hopefully, if you're worthy, you'll get the opportunity.
Yeah. Hopefully, or you know what? Maybe you won't. Because this industry is really, really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily skill. And maybe you're not as good as you think. Like, maybe I'm not as good as I think. Like, who knows what's going to happen in the future? So, like, you know, you live this life working for the future of like, okay, well, someday it's going to happen. But what if it never does? What if, does that mean in the end it was all a failure? Or is this journey a success?
I mean, for me, I feel like failure in my mind is, stopping. Failure in my mind is quitting. So I don't know if I feel the daily frustration. You know, I feel the, oh, God, I'm not, oh, shit, this happened. There. And, you know, I've been doing a ton of pitching over the past 3 months. I've pitched more since between 4th of July and Halloween of 2015 than the rest of my entire life combined, okay? Like, I've just been pitching, madness, which is great, but those pitches have led to some representation, it's led to some cool opportunities, but it hasn't broken me through the wall yet. So it's easy to feel like a failure, but it's not a failure. And it's not. I really genuinely believe that. I don't think that's rational. That's not rationalization. That is literally like, this is the process. This is the business we have chosen.
But as artists, don't we tend to be a little dramatic?
Of course. No, never. Never.
I'm a failure.
I know. And you can't fall into that trap. And you know something? It's tricky because you've got to find that people. Like, in other words, Mike Sundy was on the show last year and he was talking about his kids' books. He's a fantastic screenwriter and everything. And he gave me a note and we joked about it on the show. I know I've joked about it with him at the bar. He gave me a note. I hated this fucking note. I was like, oh, I didn't even like the way he said it. And I was like, I sat there and I said, well, I'm not listening to that note. And then 2 weeks later, I'm doing my rewrites and I did a bunch of rewrites and everything was done. And sure enough, that one note is in the back of my mind, and I go on a revisit, and I'm like, son of a bitch, he's right. And it was like, oh my God, he really did point something out that, quite frankly, the way I'd written it was pretty good. But thanks to Mike's note, I was able to move some things around, and it was much better. And I didn't send Mike a failure or anything like that. It was just that thing of, you know something? It isn't where you think it is yet. Now, Mike does a writing group where they don't do the nice stuff first. They just go right into it, and they just beat the hell out of each other. And I think that's great, and that's awesome. And he's had a lot of award-winning scripts. He's a very accomplished writer, so I can't criticize that. I am of the school of thought, though. You should always give the good stuff first,
yes,
and then the negative stuff. Because if you give the negative first, people will be so preoccupied, they won't hear the positive.
Very true.
And I've learned that from editors in reality TV. Editors have sat at lunch and told me, give me the good stuff first.
Yes.
Butter me up, because then I'll be much more agreeable to do the negative stuff.
Yeah. That's 100% true. And I totally believe in that. Because I know that, like, as, you know, as strong as a person as I am, who I've been doing this for years and years and dealing with the bad criticism, I get that negative stuff and it breaks me down. Like, I am.
You're only human.
Yeah. I'm human and I'm giving you my soul.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not doing a Hollywood script for money. I'm not trying to find the next big blockbuster. I'm trying to tell you a story that is truthful to me.
And you know something? You bring it up. Here's another thing, too. Like, for aspiring folks out there, whatever level of screenwriting you're at, you know what I mean? Like, if you're hurt by these rejections and some of this coverage you're getting that's not what you want it to be, you're not alone. You're not weird or freak or weak or a wimp for feeling hurt by it. You're human, and it's okay. And like Jen is describing, you don't want to let it consume you. But I think you should react to it as well. I think you should feel it and absorb it.
Yeah. And, you know, if it has to consume you, I mean, it does. Like, it's – but, yeah, you don't. You got to figure out how to – and, you know, that's glasses half full, right? Because bringing it, you know, back just to kind of the success versus failure. It's like, yeah, I mean, that's the point, is that I keep coming back to feeling like, God, this isn't working and these people don't like this. And I think this is so good, but it's not going to happen. You know, and this is very cliche, but at the same time, you do have to think about like Picasso and like all the, you know, like some brilliant people who, like, it was after they died that a lot of the people that actually got. So sometimes to make myself feel better, I just think, I know that after I'm dead, my shit's going to be legendary.
I think it should be legendary before that.
Yeah, well, hopefully before, but if nothing else. And that was actually the script that I read the coverage, the Slam Dance coverage for. I personally think is my most brilliant script I've ever written. And it's a commentary on society and human nature in a very Monty Python way. And I think it's fucking brilliant. And so did the manager who called me.
Yeah.
It's like, this is brilliant. And he actually used the word brilliant. But then I got this terrible Slam Dance stuff. And I was just like, you know, I don't care what anybody says. Someday, after I'm dead, when humans are ready to catch up with me, the brilliance will shine.
I don't think it's going to take that long. I think it's a matter, quite frankly, of finding your champions.
Yeah.
And the voice finding champions. Here's a danger, though, too. And I don't know if this is what happened with this particular reader or some of the other reactions you and me and other people have gotten. But I do know this. This is something to be very careful of, is when you do hand your stuff over. And this is one of the tricky parts I have in readers who are writers. Is you have to make sure you're going to give it to people who are not going to change it into their voice.
Yeah.
Into their thing. And that's another way of another way of looking at what was happening there was sometimes, and I know I've had this on the blacklist and things like that. I've had great reads on the blacklist. I've had some dodgy reads on the blacklist, and that's just the nature of the beast. But I have seen some, I did get one on one script particularly where they wrote, basically just rewrote the script and said, well, you should do it like this. And I'm like, but that's not the story I want to tell. The notes themselves were a fine idea, but that wasn't the story I want to tell. That's not the voice. And if I tried to write their suggestions, it wouldn't be as good because it wouldn't be my voice. It'd be theirs.
Right.
And that's something else that we have to – that's another sort of trap that you have to be wary of and be aware of, is when sometimes you get that feedback that's like, wait a second. You know, somebody's trying to turn this into theirs.
Yeah.
Well, instead of your, like you're saying, we're expressing ourselves. This
yeah.
is our vision in our world, in our soul. That's absolutely right.
The best advice I ever got when I was directing my first feature, right? And I knew I could do it, but of course you have all these insecurities. And I was working with the DP, who was the DP of his first feature. We were both, I'm through with white girls, right? It was mm-hmm. my first feature. So, you know, I realized early on, in the meetings with him, that he was a little insecure, maybe about himself, but also about me.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe rightfully so, you know, like,
he didn't know you.
Yeah. He didn't know me. And he's like, oh, I got a first time director and and I'm doing this. And like, we were both giving our time. Like, we didn't, you know, make money for it. We were like, we're going to just do this. You know, the producers came to us. And so, you know, so I get it. And in the end, you know, I loved him and he's, you know, we have a good relationship. But at the beginning, it was like finding each other. And I realized we'd have these meetings, him and I, and we'd sit there and he'd start questioning me. Like, I'd say, this is how I see it. And he'd say, well, that doesn't really match the rest of the film. Like, he actually started legitimately questioning and, like, you know, my decisions as a director. And I didn't know, and being a first-time director, I was a little bit like, well, I don't want to shut him out because what if he's right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to be like, no, I'm right, right. I'm right, because I don't want to pretend I'm right. I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, I know on a certain level, but I have a lot to learn. So, like, show me. I'm open. But when the DP keeps, you know, correcting everything you do, like, at a certain point, it's like, no, it's really not your place to do that. Like, this is how I see it. This is how we're doing it. So I called a really good friend of mine who's a DP, and he DP'd my short film. He was a DP on like my second short film, and it was a great film. It turned out great. And he's a professor at film schools and he really knows what he's doing. And I was like, let me call Mark and see what he has to say. And like, just make sure, am I wrong? Am I right? And so I told Mark what the DP was saying to me in our meetings. And Mark said to me, he said, you know, and I just said to him, you know, but what if he's right? This is what I said to Mark. I said, but what if he's right? Like, what if the ideas he has is right? And what if what I'm seeing is wrong? And Mark said to me, his ideas probably are right. They're probably 100% right for the movie that he would make.
Mm-hmm.
And if he was the director, that's the movie he would make. And you know what? It could turn out being a really great movie and everybody would love it. But we're not doing the movie he would make. We're doing the movie that you are making. And the movie that you're making is going to be your voice. And that's why you are the director. So you need to trust the way you see it. And people are going to love your movie.
And that's absolutely awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. Great.
Yep. And it was just like, you know, and it's like, right, you know, and you know what? Jacob might have made a really great movie as a director, and it would have been his movie, and it would have been great. And there's a million ways to make the same movie really, really good. But in the end, if you're making it, it's your voice. So you have to stick to your voice.
Absolutely right. Yeah. And you know, what's funny is I'm on the other end of that right now with this feature I'm writing for an indie director. We're shooting hopefully after the new year. And, you know, I had to remind myself several times. I was in your DP spot.
Mm-hmm.
Of like, I have been employed to bring this person's vision to life. And while we had some very good discussions and debates about certain things and characters, whatever, I also had to know that there are some times where I can't push super hard about certain things because it's going to be his movie. I've been hired to bring his vision to the page, not right. Bring my vision to the page.
Exactly.
And bring my talents and scope and things like that. Like, for example, you know, not to get into a big long story, but like when he sent me the treatment, he's like, "What do you think?" I said, "Well, there's a lot of opportunity for humor in here." He's like, "Really?" I said, "Yeah." So I added a bunch of jokes. He's like, "Oh, that's awesome." So I've been able to bring stuff, but at the end of the day, it's his vision. And yeah. I have to remember that. And actually, it's been super useful because I've been able to use his vision to help me make decisions. Be like, okay, well, I know he's not going to like this, but he will like this.
Right.
And it's actually been very helpful. So sometimes, and I've learned this in the world of reality TV, sometimes people like being directed.
Yeah.
They like being told, okay, well, what am I doing today? In fact, they like that a lot more than, well, I don't know what you're doing today.
Right.
They like need that a to lot more than indecisiveness. Of. Exactly.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Yeah.
Exactly.
So, I mean, and so I guess part of the success of failure or succeeding is like just learning to really keep a really strong belief in yourself and your own vision and your own voice. And if you know that you have this voice and you have these things to say, and you know it also because when you're creating, you love it. Like while I spend 3 months in Mexico writing, I'm in love with every moment of my life that I'm there, that I'm doing the right thing, that I am succeeding. Even though I come back and the first 4 people who read my script tell me they don't get it. And I just spent, you know, 3 months doing this life journey that's going to change my life. I'm going to come back to LA and everybody's going to buy my script and my whole life is going to change. And I know better than that because I've been in this business too long. But no, this is the time. I just had a big birthday and it's time in my life that this is the time it's going to happen. And I loved every minute of it, except I get back and I get nobody likes my script. And it's this whole down again. But
see, the problem too is you just described 3 or 4 people.
Right. Because I give up.
Look, if 3 or 4 people love your movie, it's a bomb.
Yeah.
You need a lot more than that. So you need a bit, you know what I mean? It's a tricky thing. You know, you and I both write stuff that's not universal. And so we're going to have to niche and carve out our audience. And in many ways, a lot of our struggle is going to be the search for that audience.
That's a great point. That's a great point because you know what? At the end of the day, and this is the truth, this movie that I went to Mexico to write that I was so excited about that I ended up realizing, okay, it's got too much work. People aren't getting it. I literally had 6 people read it and I stopped.
You need 10 more.
Right. I know.
I mean, look, here's the thing. You know, when you look at the John Waters, you look at the David Lynches, you look at people like that who are making brave and different stuff, and we're like that from the word go. I mean, David Lynch's biggest Hollywoodist, highest budget epic movie was his biggest failure, you know, that he was fired from. So, and that's still a sore subject. I probably shouldn't even brought it up. David Lynch, I'm sorry. And of course,
no,
we're talking about Dune, you know.
If that's a failure, now, I can have that failure.
Yeah, but like, even he didn't stop. And he'll sit there and be like, oh my God, I had this $100 million or whatever Dune cost. And it killed him. It absolutely killed him when it didn't work. And he had a movie. But he never made a movie like that again. But he found, you know, Mulholland Drive and Wild at Heart, which I think is just, I mean, just a piece of, like, a total piece of art. Wilder, you know, just, I think my favorite film of his. Twin Peaks, of course, all came after that great failure. I'll throw this one at you. We're coming up on time, but let's go a few more minutes. I wrote about this last year. I'm trying to remember when, but this is another sort of epiphany I've had and stuff, which is the reaction to success and failure is the same thing. Always try to do better.
Huh.
Always do better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, here's the thing. Let me throw this one at you. Like, let's just say everybody loved this script. Let's just say your stuff was universal. Let's just say you were grand prize at 5 or 6 festivals last year, and maybe you were a semifinalist in Nickel, and you were talking to four or five agents yesterday. When you wake up tomorrow, Jen, you're still going to have to kick some ass on your script.
Yeah.
You're still going to have to try your hardest and still do your very best to make it as good as possible. You'd have the same reaction.
Yeah. I love that. That's awesome. That's true. So, and at the end of the day, success and failure then are just a word to describe a place where you are in your life. And really, it's just life. Just living.
People may roll their eyes at this, but like, I've been rejected. I've been passed over. I pitched to a major network who almost had a heart attack with what I brought to them. I mean, I've had some gut punches. I've been fired. I've only been fired once in my entire life, and it was from an entertainment industry job for sort of standing up to the EP.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I've ever failed. I don't think I've ever failed in this business. You know, I really don't. None of those things in my mind are failure. They're throwing interceptions, and they're part of the journey. They're part of the process. And if you're a screenwriter, you're signing up for it. I honestly believe that. If you're a football player, you're signing up to be tackled. If you're a screenwriter, you're signing up for rejection. You're signing up for passing.
If you're a football player, you're signing up to be brain damaged. And if you're a screenwriter, you're signing up to go insane.
And be heartbroken.
Right.
You are. You're signing up to be heartbroken. But at the same time, though, when you get that standing ovation.
Right.
When you're getting that standing ovation, how much thought did you put into the blood, sweat, and tears before? Or did it all just disappear?
It disappeared. And it's like, wow, this is a moment. Like, I created something that got this. And they got it. They got it. And that's amazing.
Outstanding. All right. Well, Jen, I'll let you go to pursue more successes and failures.
Perfect. Both.
And I want to see that movie. Damn it. And,
somebody needs to see that movie, man. $30,000 a year on a friend's floor and, like, nobody ever saw it.
Watch, you'll be 75 years old and doing screenings of it at like BU and NYU and stuff. That it'll have this huge resurgence.
Yeah.
You'll see, it happens all the time.
Yeah.
And we've put that on the record. So for more information on Jen Sharp, you can check out the links below. Jen, I can't thank you enough. This was super informative.
Yeah, thank you. It was fun. It's always great to talk about it.
Nitty gritty look at some of the agony and ecstasy that we all go through. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening. We got plenty more guests lined up between now and the end of the year. We're probably going to be, I'm going to try to do a few more over the course of November and then a holiday special in December. We'll see if we can pull that off. So thanks everybody for listening, downloading, retweeting, and plugging. This is Tim Davis on the Handsome Timmy D Express.